This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, TSFPN.com.
Hello and welcome to the podcast for TheForce.net. I'm Eric, your host, bringing you the latest news, events, and commentary from the Star Wars community. We've got a pretty long show lined up for you today, so I'm going to make the intro very brief. I am proud to announce that our podcast here at TheForce.net has been nominated for the Podcast People's Choice Awards in the category of Movies and Film. We're going to have a rough time beating out Cinecast, but hey, you know, it's an honor just to be nominated. If you'd like to vote for us, you can head over to podcastawards.com. The rules say you can vote once per category per day, but you don't have to go quite that far if you don't want. Even a single vote would be cool. So head on over there and let's show people just how big the support for the Star Wars fan community really is. You may recall that in a prior show, Jay gave us the scoop on upcoming book releases. Well, there's some new information that's come out, and at the end of this show, we'll have that for you. But for now, here's part one of our interview with Michael Stackpole, best known to most of you as the author of the X-Wing Rogue Squadron series, I, Jedi, two of the New Jedi Order books, various Star Wars short stories, and several other sci-fi and fantasy novels. And of course, he does his own podcast called The Secrets, which focuses on the craft of writing, and he's also created the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, of which we're a proud member. And yes, that's his voice on the promo at the beginning of this show. One last thing I should note, this part of the interview has some spoilers about the Rogue Squadron novels. So if you haven't read them yet, consider yourself warned. So without further ado, here's part one of our interview with Michael Stackpole.
What got you started with writing?
Well, you know, I always liked to write. My grandfather had a book published. Mm-hmm. And so being a writer was always something that was kind of cool or okay in our family. And when I was a kid, we'd be given, you know, told to write a one-page story, a two-page story. I'd write three or four pages. So, you know, I always liked storytelling. Writing seemed to be a cool thing to do. And that was pretty much my start. And then in high school and college, started sending stories out to get rejection slips. It's actually kind of funny. When I was in first grade, I wrote a poem, and my mom really liked it.
Yeah.
And she sent the poem out to a magazine. They rejected it. So the first piece of mail I ever had that came to me, actually addressed to me, was a rejection slip. and I tend to be somewhat competitive. So, yeah. You know, I guess that was what forced me into writing, you know, to prove to the world that they were wrong when I was six.
Well, nothing like starting young, huh?
Well, there you go, yeah.
Let me ask you this. If you had to choose any profession aside from writing, what would you do?
Boy, that's really, really tough. You know, if I got to be a fantasy profession, you know, I'd be the guy who was finding the cure for cancer.
Okay.
You know, my dad was a doctor, so mm-hmm. you know, medical stuff has always intrigued me. You know, I probably would have ended up being a lawyer or a politician.
Okay.
Much the same thing, you know, just because. And I think anybody who's read my stories knows that I like politics way too much, so it's probably a good thing that I'm not a politician.
Oh, there you go. Do you have a preference between sci-fi and fantasy? Do you prefer one over the other?
You know, it's interesting. That's a question that gets asked a lot, or the other variant of it. Do you prefer writing your own stuff or in someone else's universe?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing for me, and I think for most writers, is that we like writing things that we really enjoy. So
yeah.
Sometimes it's writing in your own universe, sometimes in someone else's. I like science fiction. I like fantasy. I like a lot of other things as well. And for me, being able to switch between them keeps each one of them fresh.
Okay.
So, and that's the big thing for me is that, you know, like, I just finished a series of books, the Dragon Crown War series, and there are some people that would like me to go back and tell other stories there, and I know there are stories to tell,
mm-hmm.
but by the same token, I also like finding new things to do.
Right.
So it's a constructive form of ADD, I suspect.
Well, that makes sense. You've maintained a website for a while, and now you're doing podcasting. How much of a techie are you?
You know, I'm sort of an idiot savant techie.
Okay.
I'm really lucky in that a lot of this stuff comes really easy for me, and I don't know why.
Hmm.
So it's maintaining a website. I was typing text documents in a word processor and putting all the HTML tags in all by myself. You know, podcasting, the guys over at Dragon Page said, this is what you want to buy. This is how you plug these things together. And then, you know, listen to a few podcasts and say, okay, cool, I can do this too. But, you know, ask me to code something, forget it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're still ahead of most people I know as far as, you know, actually having a website and having a podcast and, you know, being able to keep up with the lingo and, you know, now you've got the podcast directory set up and everything. That's not too shabby.
I think it's in some ways it's being curious enough to want to go after these things, being competitive enough to want to be able to do them well, and not being intelligent enough to know that I shouldn't be able to do certain things.
There you go. Move on to the topic that brings most of our listeners here, your work with Star Wars.
Sure.
Corin Horn, first of all, am I pronouncing that right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Corin Horn is different from your stereotypical Jedi character. Tell us a little bit about him and how you came up with his concept.
Well, when I was putting together the characters for Rogue Squadron, I knew that I would need a mix of individuals who would work well together but be clearly delineated. Mm-hmm. And in building that, I had to start with Wedge. And Wedge was an interesting character because he was a feared warrior, really, really good, a great leader, and yet he was Luke's best friend.
Right.
And so you really can't imagine him being one of these hard-charging jerks. So that sort of set him up. And then I had Tycho, mm-hmm. who was extremely competent warrior, was under a lot of pressure, you know, had some adverse things going on, had some things he didn't know about. And so he became one kind of character, and I decided one of the other things that I wanted to do in the squadron was have people from different worlds have different species together. And every Corellian in the saga up to that point was a smuggler or a thief, or had done time as a smuggler or a thief.
Right.
And so it was like, well, geez, Corellia cannot just be run by smugglers and thieves. There's got to be somebody who's the equivalent of the Coast Guard.
True.
So I said, and that's who my guy will be. You know, he is a Corellian cop. So that was where I started. The idea about having him coming in from a Jedi tradition and slowly learning that he was a Jedi was built really out of two things. One, there is no way that you can have Star Wars without a Jedi somewhere.
Right.
I mean, you just have to. And I knew I wasn't going to have Luke, so I needed someone else. The other thing, and this was a really, really funny thing, when I got given the set of four books, within 2 days of my getting that assignment, I went to a convention in Mississippi, and one of the Bantam editors was there, and he said it was okay, and we announced that I had been selected to do a set of four Star Wars books. Well, everybody throughout that weekend kept coming up to me going, hey, congratulations on getting the trilogy. And I would correct them that it was four books. But everybody, you know, just person after person after person. And I like playing with readers' expectations.
Right.
So everybody thought it was a trilogy. And it just dawned on me that means this. They're coming to the end of the third book. They're expecting it all to wrap up. And so I can blow everybody's buffers by not having that happen. A third element that came in here, and this is one that it also struck me, and I was certainly a Star Wars fan, that there is a fantasy that every Star Wars fan has, aside from Leia in the slave costume. And that is the fantasy of Luke turning around and saying to them, the Force runs strong in your family. Come with me and revive the Jedi Knights.
Right.
So in that final scene in book three, when everybody's getting their rewards and everybody's happy, and Luke, you know, turns to Corin and says, come be a Jedi. You know, I knew that there were, like, you know, millions of Star Wars fans who were sitting there going, yes, score! If it could happen to this guy, it could happen to me. Which is about how long it takes him to read the two paragraphs, and then Corin looks at him and says, nope, sorry, I got something else to do.
No kidding. Talk about sudden, throwing the reader for a loop there.
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah. All of a sudden you go from everybody's happy to everybody in Rogue Squadron has quit. They're going to go out and they're going to have their own private war.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, oh, my God. And that was something that I really enjoyed because, you know, if writers give readers the stories that readers expect, the readers don't need the writers anymore.
Right.
So, you know, when we can throw them the curveball, and when they can go back and they can say, oh, yeah, I can see how we got here, I just didn't see it coming. You know, I wasn't able to keep my eye on the ball enough, but it makes sense. You know, you have them forever as a reader.
Exactly, and that's one of the things the Rogue Squadron series did really well. A lot of times, you know, you see authors or, you know, even filmmakers try to kind of throw a curveball to the audience, and it just, it doesn't stick. It's like, yeah, they didn't expect it, but it just didn't fit right with the story. You're like, ah, that seems like a cop-out. Everything with the Rogue Squadron book, as you said, you could really see it building up, except you couldn't really see it as you were first reading it. Yeah, a lot of stuff that happened in that series really threw readers for a loop. Everything that happened with Tycho, the apparent death of Corrin, Corrin turning down the acceptance into the Jedi Academy, all kinds of stuff like that. It was, and not knowing what was going to happen with the characters as far as who was going to live and who was going to die. And really, after the series started going, because there were no major characters in the story, I mean, really, Wedge was the only major character, and he didn't really have a big part in the films, it really kept the readers on their toes.
Yeah, I mean, everybody was in play.
Exactly.
You know, there were other little things that I got to do, and they were done deliberately. For example, Lu Jane Forge is the first one to die, if I remember correctly, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Lu Jane dies in Rogue Squadron, and I specifically had her die in bed during a raid, and I had that because everybody reading that goes, wait a minute, this isn't fair. These are pilots. You know, if she
exactly.
was in her X-Wing, they wouldn't have killed her. It isn't fair. And that is exactly what her squadron thought. That is, you know, and that's what the readers thought. And that's why three or four chapters later, when they go out and they get to, you know, blast the base from which the Raiders came, you know, everybody goes, yes, all right, you know, she's been avenged.
Right.
You know, so there are the things that you can do, and this is one of the things that it's, I mean, it sounds terribly mechanical when I describe it that way, but part of the job being a writer is to give your readers this emotional roller coaster, to make them feel things.
Right.
To get them more involved than just a television show is going to, or just staring at pictures is going to do. And we get to do that, because the nice thing, the difference between a movie and television and a book is that a book, and even this applies to podcasts as well, mm-hmm. books and podcasts have to be translated. You have to make more. It engages more of the brain. And so you can provoke bigger and better reactions out of people. And that's what you try and do.
True. Some people might not know this, but there was actually a photo shoot for the character of Corrin Horn, right? For the collectible card game?
Right.
What was that like? You had, let's see, it was Corrin Horn, and then Timothy Zahn had Mara Jade and Talon Card?
Right, right. And there's a promo card of all three of us.
Oh, okay. That I didn't know
yeah,
about.
Doing that was a lot of fun, and it was one of these really funny things that I knew the guys at Decipher, because I came out of the gaming industry. They had been using members of their own staff, and I knew Shannon Baxa because I'd met her at a number of shows. Mm-hmm. Well, I found out they were putting Corrin Horn and Talon Card into a set, and Shannon had mentioned that Tim would love to appear as Talon Card. So I, you know, dropped the dime to the guys at Decipher that, you know, that Tim would love to do this, and, you know, if they wanted me to appear as Corrin, I would shave my beard off. Part of the reason I wanted to shave my beard off, and part of my ulterior motive was this, is that there were a number of readers whose first exposure to Corrin Horn was reading I, Jedi. They had not read the X-Wing books.
Right.
And because I, Jedi was told first person, they assumed that I, Jedi was just my personal fantasy and me putting myself in as the character of Corrin Horn. Now,
right.
Corrin and I are nothing alike. I don't think I'd even like Corrin if he was, you know, in the room.
Hmm.
What is funny is that Corrin and I do share hair color, and we do share eye color.
Okay.
But the reason for that is this. When I was doing the research into fighter pilots,
mm-hmm.
aces tend to be relatively small, tend to have light eyes.
Interesting.
And so it just works out. And I've got green eyes, so green eyes are not exotic to me because I see them every morning.
Right.
But they're fairly exotic to other people. So to me, you know, I had denied that Corin and I were the same person, because we're not. So it was great fun to then make myself unrecognizable to become Corin. And then, you know, it was just, you know, one more way of playing with people's minds.
Okay.
But it was a lot of fun. The guys at Cypher were great. You know, we went out there, got to pull together our costumes, you know, got all made up and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Got to do the photo shoot.
Cool.
Sit in one position for an hour.
Oh, ooh. Nice.
Yeah, you know, while they're trying to figure out how to light us. That was pretty funny.
You mentioned talking about pilots. Did you have to do a lot of research on military customs or procedures to write about the fighter pilots effectively, or did it just come naturally, or did you just use kind of general information that you had?
No, I did a lot of research. I was fairly lucky in that the time when I was doing the research was right around the 50th anniversary of D-Day.
Oh, okay.
So there were a lot of TV specials and an inordinate number about fighter squadrons. And so I would listen to the veterans talk about how things went. I would read pilot biographies. I would talk to pilots. I would watch specials and read books specifically about piloting and tactics. And I logged an ungodly number of hours on the X-Wing game.
I remember that game.
Oh, yeah. I think I went through three joysticks.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, an inordinate number of hours on that stupid game.
Now, that was a good game back then.
Oh, it was a really good game.
It was like the premier flight simulator back then.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a great flight simulator, and I mean, I loved it. I think that in terms of game design, I think TIE Fighter was better.
Absolutely, and actually a lot of fans say that. A lot of people quote TIE Fighter as being the better game. But
Yeah, and that's why in Isard's Revenge, I put some of those advanced TIE Fighters in there and stuff. Because I had enjoyed, and it gave me an excuse for firing the machine up and practicing so I could describe things right, of course. It was all research.
There you go. Yeah, work-related research, of course.
Yep. And it is funny, actually, in the opening of Rogue Squadron, the first simulator thing, the redemption scenario, is a scenario out of X-Wing. And it was a scenario that drove me nuts. And I had started playing it on Friday afternoon and couldn't get through it. So I called my editor and said, send me the hint book, which wouldn't arrive until Monday. So I spent the weekend working on it, and I came up with the solution that Corin uses in that first chapter.
Really?
So on Monday, the hint book arrives.
Uh-huh.
And I read through what their solution is, and I'm going, their solution wouldn't work. No pilot would do that. So it was good fun. I felt really happy that it actually worked the way I wanted to do it.
Cool.
All right, so, Jay, tell us a little bit about the updates to the upcoming book releases.
Well, since the last time we talked, I actually found out some information literally the minute we hung up, and that was about the Ultimate Guide. I had said that it wasn't confirmed, and this was one of the DK books. It was confirmed in an email that night to us, and then it showed up on StarWars.com, I think, the next day.
Oh, great.
So October is going to see the Ultimate Guide, and that's going to be along the lines of the current DK visual dictionary books.
Okay.
It looks like I guess the thing that it's most closely going to resemble is DK does some other Ultimate series books for Spider-Man, Fantastic Four, The Incredible Hulk, X-Men, things like that. So it's going to be a big thick tome. It's going to give you the entire saga.
Okay.
And then also in the last time we talked about the book update, I mentioned that we didn't know a lot of information about Legacy of the Force, which was the 9-book series that's coming out.
Right, set after the New Jedi Order?
Correct, yeah. It's coming out starting next May.
Okay.
And thanks to the Second Quest, he sent us an email, and he gave me a full update. He says a lot of this information has been confirmed. Actually, all the information that I'm going to read you here is actually confirmed. So thanks very much. Goes to him. We've got the 9 issues. We don't know the titles of the books, but we do know that they will be coming out between May of 06 and June of 08.
Okay.
And it looks like they're publishing in May, September, and December of 06, May, June, September, December of 07, and March and June of 08. We've got a number of different authors on board for this. Actually, the first book is called, looks like it is called Betrayal by Aaron Alston, and it's going to be a hardcover. Looks like it's going to do hardcover and several paperbacks the same way the...
Okay. Kind of like hardcover, paperback, and then just repeat that cycle three times?
Right.
Okay.
Wash, rinse, and repeat. Right.
Okay.
Just like the New Jedi Order. So we've got Aaron Alston doing the first book, and then Karen Travis, who is doing the Republic Commando books.
Okay.
We've got Troy Denning doing the next paperback, Aaron Alston doing another paperback, then Karen Travis is going to come back, do a hardcover, Troy Denning doing a paperback, Aaron Alston doing a paperback, Karen Travis doing a paperback, and Troy Denning's going to follow it up with the final hardcover.
Okay.
So it's kind of a mix of these authors here.
So they're all fan-favorite authors, too, so that's something to look forward to.
Exactly. And the little information that the second quest includes here, it says that these are set 37 years after A New Hope, which puts them post-New Jedi Order.
Okay.
All the major characters will be returning, as will, now, this one just floored me, Lumia. Fans of the Marvel Comics series will remember Lumia from the Nagai series from the last 20 episodes of the Star Wars Marvel comics.
Okay, so for all the other listeners out there who are scratching their heads much like I am right now, who is this person?
She was this dark lady of the Sith who was trained by Vader.
Okay.
Kind of the same way like Asajj Ventress is in the Republic comics.
Okay.
And she was a very interesting character. She kind of took the place of Vader when they didn't have Vader after Return of the Jedi anymore.
Okay.
Which is very interesting because, to my knowledge, other than the passing reference in a role-playing game book or like a chronology book, she hasn't made any other appearances.
Right.
So that's kind of cool.
Okay.
Boba Fett and the new Mandalorians look like they're going to be back as well. We saw some of them at the end of the New Jedi Order series. And it's going to span about 2 to 3 years, the same length of time that it's actually going to take to publish them, similar to the New Jedi Order books. And it says here it will involve, quote, planetary interests threatening to disrupt a time of relative peace as Luke is plagued by visions of an approaching darkness. You know, so...
It's nice and vague.
Yeah.
Okay.
They can do whatever they want there.
Hmm.
Okay, so that's going to be... That's our next big story arc series.
Okay.
We've also got some smaller things coming out. There's a small standalone paperback series, three paperback books, called Coruscant Knights. These are going to be set after Revenge of the Sith.
Okay.
They're going to be by Michael Reeves, who did the Darth Maul Shadowhunter. And so these are going to be coming out in May of 06, 07, and 08. So we'll be seeing those over the next 3 years. There's also, it looks like, a couple Sith-era books. And when we say Sith era here, we're not talking Revenge of the Sith, we're talking...
Tales of the Jedi, the old Knights of the Old Republic time.
Correct, yeah. Okay. We're talking 4,000 years prior to A New Hope.
Right.
They're untitled, but there's going to be one here by Drew Karpyshyn, which is a following the life of Darth Bane.
Okay.
Darth Bane, for anyone who's read the comic series Jedi versus Sith, he was the Sith Lord that came up with the rule that there's got to be only two Sith, the
master and apprentice.
Right. And then there's also going to be a another untitled hardcover that's going to be set during the Sith era, coming out around October of 07. It was to be written by Elizabeth Hand, but it looks like she has overcommitted herself on some other books, so she's not going to be working on that one. So
Okay.
It's up for grabs. And actually, another email I got from the second quest said that it may not even be during the Sith era at this point, because if she's not going to write it, they may choose not to do that.
They may take that license for that book and move it somewhere else in the chronology.
Correct. Then there we've got the other Timothy Zahn book called Allegiance, which is going to be set right after A New Hope. There's going to be the main characters, Mara Jade, a little bit of Vader. That's going to be due out in February of 07. Presumably, it's going to be a hardcover.
Okay.
And I caught Zahn's talk at Celebration 3, and the things that he wants to do with this and what he's actually going to be allowed to do may be two different things, but it should be a really great book. Basically, Mara Jade at the height of her powers, and
right,
her working in conjunction or at odds with Darth Vader, we'll have to see. But
I think he also mentioned that it might have a little bit of Thrawn in it as well.
He'd like to do some Thrawn. He'd like to do a lot with Thrawn, but kind of what he's allowed to, because if he sets Thrawn up as too much of a character right now, it's not going to work having Thrawn come out of the Unknown Regions later. So, I mean, he did talk about maybe having a cameo by Thrawn. Maybe he had to come into Coruscant to, you know, deliver some packages or something like that.
UPS guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Blue.
Yeah.
And then He also lets us know that there are two other hardcovers that are due out in 2008, but they don't have any titles or authors assigned with them yet, but they have, you know, those slated for the editorial review and everything.
Okay.
And these notes come from a series of sources, but most of them are Sue Rostoni and the stuff that she publishes, or excuse me, the stuff that she posts on the StarWars.com message boards.
Okay, good stuff.
I hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. I want to encourage you guys to email us anytime you have questions, comments, or feedback. Our email address is podcast@theforce.net. And if you like today's show, you can help us out quite a bit by voting for us at podcastalley.com. And from now through the end of July, you can vote for us at podcastawards.com in the movies and film category. As always, I should point out that the opinions expressed here belong to Mike Stackpole, Jay, and myself, and they don't necessarily reflect the opinions of other TFN staff members, nor of Lucasfilm. The Force.net is not affiliated with Lucasfilm in any way. This podcast is copyright 2005, TheForce.net, and as silly as the sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care, and may the Force be with you.